The first reading today comes from Genesis chapter 32, verses 22 through 32. The same night Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two maids, and his 11 children and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream, and likewise everything that he had. Jacob was left alone, and an angel wrestled him until daybreak. When the angel saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he struck him on the hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with them. Then the angel said, "Let me go, for the day is breaking." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." So he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." Then the angel said, "You shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with humans and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked him, "Please tell me your name." But the angel said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And there the angel blessed him. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life is preserved." The sun rose upon Jacob as he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat thigh muscle that is on the hip socket, because he struck Jacob on the hip socket at the thigh muscle.
Our second reading is from Joseph Campbell, The Way of the Animal Powers, as quoted in The Power of Myth, The First Storytellers, page 69. The animal envoys of the unseen power no longer serve, as in primeval times, to teach and to guide humanity. Bears, lions, elephants, ibexes, and gazelles are in cages in our zoos. Humanity is no longer the newcomer in a world of unexplored plains and forests, and our immediate neighbors are not wild beasts, but other human beings, contending for goods and space on a planet that is whirling without end around the fireball of a star. Neither in body nor in mind do we inhabit the world of those hunting races of the Paleolithic millennia, to whose lives and life ways we nevertheless owe the very forms of our bodies and structures of our minds. Memories of their animal envoys still must sleep somehow within us, for they wake a little and stir when we venture into wilderness. They wake in terror to thunder, and again they wake with a sense of recognition when we enter any one of those great painted caves. Whatever the inward darkness may have been to which the shamans of those caves descended in their trances, the same must lie within ourselves.
Standing in the middle of a field, large field, like the Great Plains type of field, I began to feel that there was something going on around me. The wind was really blowing and the sky was turning dark. And then I noticed in the sky what looked like swirling clouds and realized that right there above me was a tornado forming. And I knew I had to get to a basement somewhere to shelter. And I looked around, and off in the distance was a large brick church, very large. Nothing else there, just the church. And I looked, and it, it had basement-type windows, and I knew that if I could get into that place that I'd be safe. So I began to run, and as I looked back behind me, I could see multiple tornadoes forming in the sky. And as I got closer to the church, I noticed that there was the Buddha, what seemed like the Buddha, sitting on the steps, except he was wearing overalls, and he was very, very fat. And I said, I've got to get to the basement. Look, there are tornadoes forming. And he said, those aren't tornadoes. Those are wolves. I said, what? And I turned back around and I realized what looked like was the kicking up of the bottom of the tornado's funnel were actually hind legs. And there were hundreds of them and they were all moving toward me. And then the Buddha laughed and he said, a basement is not going to do you any good. But I went in anyway. And as soon as I got in there, I could hear them running in after me. They were everywhere. And it seemed like any direction I moved, they were following me or somewhere. And I ran up to what was an upper foyer and went into a balcony. And in the balcony, I could see down inside the sanctuary, wolves running everywhere. So I ran back into the hallway and thought if I could get into a return air vent, they wouldn't find me. So I opened up the vent and crawled in only to hear a wolf running down through the vent. And so I crawled back out and thought, where am I going to go? And I looked behind me and there was a restroom there. And I thought, if I can get in there and lock the door, I'll be safe. So I ran in. But there was no lock on the door. It was one of those swinging doors with no lock. And right in behind me came two large wolves. Their backs came up to about here on me. And they were foaming at the mouth and had bright yellow eyes and looked at me in terror. And I ran up and there was no place to go except the back wall. And I had my shoulders pinned up. And the two wolves stood up on twos. And the male who was standing at my right spoke with a voice that was like Darth Vader and said, you must become one of us or we will devour you. And I said, I can't. I have a wife and a child and responsibilities. He says, you have to. Or we will eat you. And I said, I can't. Now here's where it gets a little violent. At that moment, I noticed there was a third wolf. It was lying down perpendicular to the other wolves on the floor with its back face up. But it had no energy in it, no breath in it. It was like a zombie wolf, sort of like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, waiting for some life to come into it. And then I looked at its face, and it was my face. And in one motion, the male wolf standing in front of me took my hand, and suddenly there was a sawed-off shotgun, and it went off, and the wolf on the floor exploded. And I closed my eyes and screamed. And I opened my eyes. And the room was pristine. No blood on the walls, nothing. And there was a man and a woman standing in front of me instead of two wolves. And the woman, who was to my left, gently took my hand and said, you can wake up now, Sid. Which I did promptly. That dream happened to me when I was 28 years old. I'd been having wolf dreams since I was 3 years old, according to my mother. In every dream, they were chasing me, and I always woke up before they caught me. But But this one was different. They caught me somehow. And I had to deal with them. I had to confront them as they confronted me. Now at age 28, I was struggling with what I was going to be when I grew up. I'd already graduated from seminary. I almost had finished my doctorate, but hadn't quite. I was disillusioned with ministry and thought, how can someone really do ministry and keep their soul? I thought, if I do this the way I'm supposed to, I will keep my head low, I will walk in the direction I'm supposed to walk, and I'll climb the ladder, and I'll have a good salary someday, and a good pension, and life will be good. Because that's the way you're supposed to do it. And I knew the rules, and I knew I could do those rules if I was required. But at night, when I would go to sleep, the wolves would chase me. They had other things in mind for me. And once that confrontation happened, and I said no, there was a direction of my life that changed. What you know of me now wouldn't have been here without that confrontation. It changed my life. It changed my direction. I said no to something, not that was out there, but that was in here, an ambition that I knew I had, that I could live ruthlessly and be successful. But it wasn't the path that would bring fulfillment. No one can tell me that those cave drawings aren't real. No one can tell me that that's just something from ancient human beings. We all have these rhythms in us that lie deep. You know, we've had organized religion for about 4,500 years, really. We've had written organized religion for even a smaller period of time. But humans have been around for 50,000 years. What did we do before that? Well, we gathered in circles around the fire. We told stories. We hunted. We gave birth. We went through the rhythms of life. We died. We stepped out of the cave into the fear of the saber-toothed tiger. These rhythms are all still in our sophisticated brains. They're all still here. They come out at night and they remind us that we are of the earth, that we are of the animals, that we are animal. If you don't think the rhythms are still there, just watch your dog trying to pack down the snow in the middle of the living room. Have you ever seen that? The dog just keeps going in circles, keeps scratching, keeps working. There's no snow there. There's no savanna there, but they are working to get that snow down so they can be comfortable. Where does that come from? It's down inside of them because they were wolves once. I saw a great thing on Facebook last week that you see the dog lying on the couch. It says, "We were once wolves, wild and wary. And then we found out you had sofas." Joseph Campbell says that one of the powerful things about mythology is that it's not just the telling of stories, but it's the telling of our story. And that the great storytellers in every culture have a way of telling a story that is direct to their own culture, but somehow taps into something that lies deep within. And we know the story to be true, not because it's rational, not because we think that it may have actually happened historically, but because something about its truth-telling works within us. It fits with who we understand ourselves to be as humans and the world to be. And the good myths help us not only identify what we're afraid of, but help us to step into the place beyond that fear, to work through it, to push through it. Jacob had a wolf dream. Did you know that? It wasn't a wolf dream. It was about an angel. An angel who showed up at night. Now, he wasn't 28. He wasn't struggling with ambition, at least the ministry kind of ambition. He had other issues. He had tricked his brother out of a birthright, his twin. Jacob was good looking from the beginning. His brother was ugly. His mother loved him. Mother didn't like his brother so much. But daddy was loyal to the whole order of things, and that is the oldest, and Esau was the oldest by a couple minutes. Even though he was hairy and red and ugly, he deserved the blessing because he was the oldest. And Rachel, the mother, she did not think that that should be. So she worked out a scheme for daddy to be tricked. He was old and blind, and she dressed Jacob up in a hairy suit. And she says, "Give your son the blessing." And he's out there, and he gave Jacob the blessing. And Jacob was blessed then, even though he wasn't Esau. He looked and smelled like Esau, but he really wasn't. And then Esau was banished from that land and went off and created his own world. And when we meet up with the story here in this text that was just read, Jacob has heard that Esau's coming back. And he's bringing his family with him, and all of his cattle, and his army, and whoever else was out there. And Jacob knew he had to be coming to get him, right? So Jacob did the courageous thing. He sent his family across the river to meet Esau before him. And he slept on the other side of the river. He thought he'd escaped, but he hadn't. That night, he was wound up in a fight. The text says, and it's really interesting, the Hebrew uses a word for the angel that doesn't really mean angel. There's no good translation. Some texts say it was a man. Some say it was an angel. Some say it was God. The Hebrew wants us to feel all three so that it's ambiguous, but that we know somehow that what Jacob is wrestling with is no ordinary person, but with divinity itself and with direction in life. And he wrestles and he wrestles and he wrestles and he wrestles, and finally, when he wakes, he's injured. And he's named something different. He's named Israel. Because Israel means I have striven with God and prevailed. Jacob means I take, I grab, I steal. Now, just a little side note. Anytime the people of Israel tell the story of Jacob, they're not just talking about some ancient character. They're identifying that as themselves. The Psalms talk about Israel as Jacob / Israel. They were writing their own script. They were telling about themselves. They were saying, this is who we are. We are takers. We are grabbers. Look what we did with Joshua. We came into this land that wasn't ours and we took it. And man, there's still issues going on to this day around that, right? But they said, that's not all we are. We're also Israel. There's a higher calling. We are Jacob and we are Israel. What the story does is what good myth does. It tells the story as it really is, where we really are in our struggle. And then points to a way to push through that, to be what we've not yet been. That's what a good myth does. Joseph Campbell said that the great storytellers, our ancestors, we don't know what they said, but we had the images that they drew on the caves. And we knew that somehow they were creating an order for a very chaotic life, probably much more chaotic than our own lives in this time and age. But the rhythms that they went through are still the same rhythms we go through. And whether we have wolf dreams or God wrestling dreams, or we just wake up someday and go, you know what? This isn't working for me. There's got to be something else. That's what we're called to be. One of the powerful things about Jesus is that he never discounted his own Judaism. He held on to the end. But Judaism had gotten locked into a rigidity at that time that didn't work for many people. And Jesus came in and said, much like your song, Martin, there's this other thing called love. It's there in our scriptures. It's there in our text. Love your neighbor as yourself. Love God with your heart, mind, soul, and strength. These are the core of what it means to be a Jew. And he lived that principle out to the end and created a way for other people to live that principle. He got us down there wrestling in the night with our own stuff and provided another pathway. One of my favorite novels is one that my son told me about called Einstein's Dreams by Alan Lightman. Lightman is a physicist at MIT, but he writes these fun novels. And in this particular novel, he says that he takes 30 dreams of Einstein in 1905 while he was working at the patent office, and dreams about how light works and how time works. And each chapter is a different scenario of what could be, and they all sort of evolve into, in some way, what later became known as relativity and that concept. But Lightman plays with this and creates this sort of dreaming Einstein. Well, one of the dreams has Einstein seeing time as where you can go back into it and slow it down and then change the rhythm of it and then project back into the future for something new. It's a cool image, huh? But it doesn't happen that way. The way it happens is those things continue on. Those rhythms that are part of us, that stuff that's written on the walls, it's all in us. But it doesn't mean we are destined for that only. There is that moment of choice, that moment of wrestling, that moment of confrontation where we say no and everything can change. Years ago in our youth group confirmation, He said, what is your idea of fate or destiny? I said to the kids, you can ask me anything you want. And so that was what they asked. And I said, you know, I sort of like the theology of Forrest Gump. It's not just that we have a destiny, like Star Wars or whatever, but sometimes it's where the feather lands. The feather. Where the feather lands. And we pick it up right from there. And that maybe it's the meeting of that destiny and that feather. That's the story of Jacob. That's the story of the wolf. We have a destiny that's part of our DNA. It's in our bones. It's not some plan out there saying, Sid, this is where you need to go. It's not that. It's deeper than that. It's 50,000 years of direction. But the feather can still land, and we can still choose to take that energy in a different direction. Become your own storyteller. Become the storyteller of change. Not just for you, but for the sake of the planet. And this myth of your own life will begin to make sense. Amen.